Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to another episode of All About Service Dogs, hosted by yours truly, Doc Vinsel. Tonight, we'll have a special guest, and we'll be featuring Maggie Christina. Maggie will be talking to us tonight about her job, her work as a dog trainer, and her work in program evaluations. And she might give us a couple of tips on how to evaluate a good program, if we can get her to go in that direction. So I just want to welcome everybody in. Thank you for calling a friend and telling a friend to listen. Thank you for sharing our notices on your pages and in your groups so that we can have more listeners. So if you don't mind, while you're listening tonight, go ahead and click on follow so that you can follow and you'll be aware of all the other opportunities you have to listen to our shows. So click follow, and we would certainly appreciate that. And if you get to feeling in the middle of the show that you might have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, you can feel free to dial 646-668-2499. And once you dial that number, you'll have an option to press the number 1 on your phone keypad. That lets me know that you actually want to speak. Other than that, you can just dial that 646-668-2499 and listen through your phone. That way you won't be stuck on your computer, and if maybe you're in transit or something, you can listen in on your phone, and you don't have to worry about that computer connection. So having said that, Miss Maggie, introduce yourself and tell the people a little bit about your connection to the service dog world.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me this evening, Doc. I really appreciate it. And, you know, my work with service dogs technically started way back when I was a child. Believe it or not, my sister was born legally blind. And the idea of service dogs first came up for me when I was as young as 8 years old. My sister had considered getting a seeing eye dog at the time. We actually lived in Portland, Oregon, so the Boring location, it's literally called Boring, Oregon. It was the location of one of the first Seeing Eye Dogs programs, right? And so I first gathered an interest way back when, and I decided early on I wanted to get involved with dog training. And so I did that. Some of my first work volunteering was actually through puppy raising programs with a couple of organizations nearby in the Northwest. And I grew from doing that to becoming a professional dog trainer. I did a lot of boarding and training, got into a lot of behavioral modification, and within a few years started specializing in aggression of all things. It was kind of a strange happenstance that brought me back into the world of service dogs because I started helping with evaluations. After a few years, started working with a couple of different programs and doing evaluations of the programs. So I started becoming a consultant and helping some of the local places look at and observe dogs before choosing them to come in for training. And because there was a couple of organizations that were starting to, and I think a lot of places are starting to do this, where they're trying to pull shelter dogs, trying to save shelter dogs or rescue dogs, and then putting them to work or to service in these types of organizations. So that's kind of the initial work that I did in the ground level, getting into service dogs from a professional standpoint.
Okay, Maggie.
My whole history out at you.
Two things. I got two things.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late for me to tell you to go decaf.
Say that again?
I said it is too late for me to tell you to go decaf.
Oh.
But.
Yeah, I've always had a lot to say, that's for sure.
But I can tell you this. I have plenty enough time for you to just lay back, relax, You're going to get it all in, but we can't hear as fast as you're talking.
That I can slow down for you guys a little bit.
I know you can. So that's what I need for you to do, because some of us have a problem that we're not slow to speak, but we're slow to hear. So you have to lay it back just a little bit.
So basically, to give you guys a nutshell of my work with service dogs is I'm able to come into an organization and review their overall program. Whether it's choosing different dogs to place into these programs or looking at the overall training, right? With service dogs, we know that the small details are really important, because we want to have dogs that can thrive and perform at pretty high levels, you know, standards, and to try to also prevent burnout, which is the other part of training at times, is trying to do it in a way that's efficient without also burning out the dog emotionally. Because sometimes this kind of work can be hard on the dogs, too.
There you go. Now, see, we can stay with you now. We know where this train's trying to go.
Choo-choo.
So now we could buckle in and we could go for a ride together.
But take us on, Doc.
There you go. Now, so dogs have been with you forever, and dog training has been in your heart, as you say, since you were a kid. And your sister being blind, you saw a benefit for a guide dog and what they can do. And then, you know, the broader scope of the service dog is not too far of a jump from the guide dog. So,
there's some different tasks involved.
Oh, well, there's many different tasks involved, but it's not too far to jump. If you can see guide dogs, then you could say, wow, these dogs could be helpful. I wonder if they can help with this. And, you know, and you go like that. But you started into dog training. Let's talk about just your general dog training for a minute and get some background there. And so you were young when you started the idea of dog training. How did your training start? Did it start as informal training? Did it start as, well, I'm going to take a course, or I'm going to intern with somebody, or I'm going to work with dogs and pick up poop for a while in a kennel, and then maybe they'll teach me some stuff? How did that work?
Yes, and yes. I think all of the above. My first interaction was, I read all of the dog training books I can get my hands on. I think a huge motivation for me learning to read when I was, you know, 7 years old or so, was so that I could scour dog training books. So I did that. By the time I was 11, I took my first group class. And when I was 14, I started doing helping with puppy raising with Guide Dogs for the Blind. So it kind of developed from that point. I was fortunate enough to actually go through homeschooling as a teenager as well. So it gave me a lot more time to focus my energy in this general direction. So I ended up developing a love of working with just private clients as well. I started doing private lessons in smaller group classes as a teenager, and eventually ended up living at a training facility with a man that at that point had been training for, I believe it was about 45 years, and that's really when things kind of picked up for me, I think. It wasn't too terribly long after that experience into my mid-20s is when I started to do the program reviews for some of the other organizations that I became involved in.
Okay, that is super. Now, just for sake of background information for our listeners, you gave us your dog training background. Now, your educational background has taken you to a place where you have a little bit of credibility, I would say. And tell us about what you're doing now and you're working now in the education behind that.
That's such a great question. I'm doing a small variety of things. Part of how you and I got brought together is I'm currently working or trying to help with a service dog organization locally called Vets to Vets United. And part of my hope for some of the similar types of training programs is I would like to help service dog training programs that are training their own dogs, like so owners that get involved with those programs that then train them. Does that make sense? As opposed to older methods or older programs like Guide Dogs for the Blind that used to breed their own dogs. I'm helping create a functioning system to allow people to more efficiently train their own service dogs and helping to create the systems for the organization to support people to that end result, to that end goal.
Okay. I threw that ball in there one way and you sent it out the other way.
I tend to do that.
I'm going to ask it this way.
Go ahead.
What formal education do you have, period?
Aside from, I went to a couple of different colleges in Southern California. I mostly looked at business courses, things like that. My formal education in dogs has been
I'm not talking about dogs.
Experience.
I said period.
Formal education, period. Well, so one of the backgrounds that I do have is I have researched extensively different training systems for humans, such as experiential education. I've gone through multiple trainings and certifications on customizing experiential education courses for humans. And I'm also a certified leadership development course instructor, too. So I have more of a background in creating different programs and development, educational development, and in the human field, as well as dogs.
Okay. Now, follow me now. Maybe I need to tether you to my hip so you can stay with me because I'm trying to move you off of where you're at and take you in another door. So you got to follow. Or you make my job hard, then I start to sweat, and then I feel like I should make you sweat since I'm sweating. And, you know, then, you know, we forget that we got everybody out there. So let's ask this further on question. We do know that you do some dog training and you do some program evaluations, but your day job would be what?
That is my day job. So I work with different dog companies, whether or not they're professional dog trainers. Some of them own boarding facilities, doggy daycares, things like that. And some of them also just teach dog training group classes, just, you know, and anybody that's in the profession of especially family dogs. And I work with different companies on helping them create and add value to pre-existing programs. And I also do staff training for dog training companies. And I had been in the realm of doing and conducting board and train programs on a limited basis for certain clients, as well as I specialize in aggression. So for family dogs, not necessarily bite work. So a lot of my work is based in that. However, the last couple years, a lot of my professional consulting has really taken over a lot of my clock, which is a good thing. I'm able to give back to, you know, larger businesses and groups of people that can then go out and help produce better lives for general people with average family dogs.
Okay, good enough. Now, does your particular company, well, I guess I got to ask it first like this. Do you have a company of your own that you work under, or do you, you know, just do it a different kind of way, or?
So I have a private practice called Heal Consulting.
There you
and
go.
That is, yeah, and that is my business end where I take on private clients. You know, so basically when I say private clients, I'm pretty much referring to everyday family dog owners, not necessarily my professional clients. So a lot of those folks that I work with have, like I mentioned earlier, I specialize mostly in aggression. So the majority of my private clients come to me for helping them solve and resolve aggression issues with their dogs. And that, so hence the term heal, heal consulting.
Okay,
and then I also,
great.
Yeah, right. And I have technically two businesses that are running kind of side by side right now. So the second one is grassroots dog training, and that is kind of the next leap in terms of where I'm going with a lot of the program development that I'm doing right now. It's all a brand new kind of conception, which is why I think I'm a little all over the place. It's, you know, a pretty significant transition for me right now, but the end goal in mind is that I can potentially reach out and help a larger variety of dogs and people. Because really, at the end of the day, I would say my place that I come from as an individual in this industry is really to help enhance the dog's experience. And so even within the realm of service dogs, there's still things that we can do, like I mentioned earlier, that we can implement to help prevent things like burnout. You know, so it's really important to try to bring more clarity into our training systems so that we can have the dogs do more without burning them out, without, you know, by allowing them to still thrive as individuals, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense to me. I'm just trying to get you to talk about this stuff. Now,
yeah, so here's an example. The work that I've seen happen with Terry and her program, the Vets to Vets United. First of all, for those of you that aren't familiar with this program, it's really a great solid program. What she's done is she's a veterinarian, you know, like for pets, and she has created a organization to help veterans suffering from PTSD to train their own service dogs. And just like a lot of similar programs out there, what they're choosing to do is select rescue dogs or puppies to raise, things like that. And what can happen when you have, like, when you're trying to train the person and train the dog at the same time, not like having a dog with a trainer until they're fully trained and then getting placed, you have this slightly different dynamic that can sometimes add a little bit more stress onto the dog, right, while they're in this training program with the person also being trained. And so we're trying to devise strategies for helping to kind of reduce the dog's stress load and to be also able to integrate easier training techniques that work a little bit quicker. I think that that's the other thing that I tend to bring on board with the companies that I work with is because of my history with boarding and training, I use a system that's very, very, very efficient. And the more efficient the system to train the dog, that is, the easier it is to get the dog to understand the training, the less stress they're going to feel. And so by trying to implement things like that and other stress-relieving activities, teaching these things to the people that are trying to train their dogs, the hope is that we can create an easier system to move people through so that they can still reach their goals with that dog while still making sure that everybody's taken care of and that there's nothing we're missing in the lifestyle plan or the training plan for the dog.
Okay.
I know I moved through this stuff so quickly. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We're going to work it out. So you basically have at least a two-pronged approach. One, you work with organizations,
mm-hmm.
and two, you work with different individuals that would be what we call owner trainers and trainer-assisted owner training.
Correct.
Is
yes,
that
correct.
Okay, great. Now, we got some people to open their ears a little bit, and they're starting to understand why they should listen to you, and what could you tell them? What helped
you? Yeah, thanks for hanging in with me there, guys. Yeah, it's a different approach, and it's an area that I've worked where I haven't had the opportunity to talk about it very often, if that makes sense. So it's almost like I'm kind of struggling with you guys to try to make sense of all of it, because it really is a slightly different approach. It's like the idea of, hey, let's focus on really trying to bring the dog to a place of balance, because when that happens, they can absorb more. And what we need them to do is absorb more information, is to become better behaved so that they're more open to the training. And so when you're working with a dog that you're trying to bring up into some aspect of service work, when you hit these like roadblocks or behavioral problems or dysfunctions, there's different ways of trying to go about fixing those things instead of, you know, ultimately giving up on the dog or having things go in a different direction. Do we have time? Can I tell you guys a quick story?
Please, tell us a quick story.
Yeah.
But don't tell it so quickly. You know, take your time.
I will take a few deep breaths just for you guys, and I'm going to relax a little bit. I'm going to lull you into a nice little story. This, it's not necessarily a nice one, but it's an important lesson. One of the first experiences I had on looking at a program and critiquing a program, I was given, and I'm not going to tell you guys the name of this organization because I want to kind of keep that private, but I was asked to review a program and then to review a specific dog. And they had notes written up on the dog and a history, all of these things. So I took a week or so. I went through things. I went and observed. I took a look at the dog. I looked at the information. And I came back to the founder of the organization, and I said, you know, I got to be honest. I don't have a good feeling about this dog. I've watched your trainer work, where she'd be pretty good in, like, a PetSmart or something like that. It's not exactly what this dog needs at this time, and I see pressure building. And I'm concerned that this dog may have the potential to bite. And I really felt this way. It was pretty adamant. And to make a long story short, they kind of talked amongst themselves and decided, you know, that I think everything's going to be okay. I think this dog's perfectly fine. So they went ahead and went through with the transaction, so to speak. The dog was purchased by a family, went home to the family. 2 days later, the dog fairly severely bit one of the people in the household. And that was one of my first experiences. And part of the reason why I have decided to kind of slowly lurk in the background, and, you know, when I come in contact with folks like Terry that are really open and interested, I love being able to give back this kind of information because I've seen where things have gone wrong sometimes and where that pressure can build with the dogs, especially that are being pulled from shelters. So I think for me, you know, kind of having told that story, it's really important that I feel like for the organizations that are out there choosing to rescue dogs, to put them into service, that they just have the additional pieces there to help relieve the dog's stress if it's needed. The story I told you guys, that's one of about four different ones that I'm aware of, similar stories where dogs were trained, dogs were placed, and dogs ended up becoming aggressive a little later on. And I'm not sure if this is something else that other folks have experienced, or maybe it's just one of those things that it doesn't feel good to talk about. So we tend to kind of tiptoe around issues like that. And that's why I speak about the dog's experience so much. That's really the biggest advocacy that I hold in all of this, is for the dogs themselves.
Okay. I like that. And that was a good example of what a pair of eyes like yours can do for a program. Now,
correct.
If
yeah,
you could go back.
Yeah, because there's preventative things that can be implemented fairly easily. As talkative as I am and as quickly as I talk, I'm still able to, it's like my brain works the same way. I might look at a dog and I'll run a bunch of information through my brain and I'll come to a pretty good conclusion, sometimes relatively quickly, which allows me to work very efficiently for the companies that I do work with.
Okay, now let's go back a little ways and let's talk about your approach, and it might involve some of your ideology,
mm-hmm.
but without giving away any trade secrets, you know, go ahead and kind of get us comfortable with, let us know about your approach and
mm-hmm.
what might make you a necessity for a program or even for an individual that is looking to owner train and they believe in that whole idea of adopt, don't shop when looking for a service dog. So
that's fabulous.
Talk about that a little bit.
Let's see if I can keep this one on track. What do you say, Doug?
Hey, I'm betting on you.
I guess let's talk about two things. First of all, my general ideology. I believe in what I call wellness plans, and this is a general approach that I have no matter what the situation is. I don't care if it's a brand new puppy with no issues, if it's just going to be raised as a family dog, to a service dog dealing with aggressive issues. With whatever range, doesn't matter. What a wellness plan is it's a kind of a specific lifestyle plan that's been catered to meet the needs of that individual dog. Now, in a wellness plan for me, the system that I use, there's basically seven key areas. And when you work through those areas and you address those seven areas, you can basically know for sure that whatever influencers might be out there on your dog's behavior, they will have been addressed through that complete wellness plan. Now, the nice thing about that is when you approach things in that way, I think I mentioned this earlier, you're basically kind of balancing the dog out. If they have any behavioral dysfunctions, if they're a little bit on the sensitive side versus a little over the top and easily excitable, you know that you're doing everything to bring that dog into center. And when you start with a training with a very healthy, mentally and physically fit dog, you're going to put in a whole lot less work potentially just because everything's clicking on all cylinders. And so doing something like that, creating a individual dog's plan of action or their wellness plan, their lifestyle plan, whatever you want to call it, is what I believe it should be the first and foremost thing that's put into place, no matter who the dog is. Now, assuming that people have that piece, you can also look at, because I believe you wanted to specify, talk a little bit about the owner training programs, correct?
Well, either or both, you know, because both are listening, so.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, let's start with the owner training programs, because there's some important pieces that are sometimes missed. We'll even talk about when you first bring the dog back. Like, you go and you do an evaluation, and you've decided, okay, this is the correct dog. Now, when you first bring a dog home, especially out of a shelter situation, we don't necessarily know what the dog's history is. You're not even entirely sure who the dog is because, you know, some behaviors might be buried or suppressed because of the environment, you know, things of that nature. So in the first 3 weeks that they transition into your new house, there are things you can do, like a ditch the dish kind of a program, giving the dog their food out of an interactive feeder, for example. That can actually do a lot in reducing, like, stress hormones, for example. So that can be very therapeutic for dogs in transitions like that. Not running out and immediately trying to socialize them. Kind of taking it easy, especially in the first week. This can really help to prep the dog for the undertaking that's about to happen with the addition of all the training. Sometimes what you might be running the risk of if you hit the ground running, so to speak, when you first bring the dog home, is when they don't have that opportunity to transition and kind of, you know, become balanced again after moving into the new house, they might start to develop stressors that they're not able to simply shake off right away because they're still adapting to the environment. And when with certain dogs, this pressure can really build up over some time, and it could cause training to start to kind of break down, sometimes even six months down the line. So you're really doing the dog a whole lot of good, and you're going to make things easier for yourself in the long run if you go easy on them, especially in the first 3 weeks, but particularly within that first week. And again, it's one of those things that not a lot of people know about or realize. It's just one of the little tricks that you can pick up if you're involved in like boarding and training type scenarios.
Okay. So going further with your approach in your plan, I guess maybe you just want to give a little tease, and that's, you know, I ain't telling y'all no more. If you want more, you just gonna have to hire me.
Oh, in terms of the wellness plan?
No, not necessarily. You already mentioned the wellness plan, but in your approach.
I'm pretty wide open. You guys are welcome to call and ask any question that you would like to as well. I can give you a little bit more as well, on top of it. So let's say you get the dog home and you do your due diligence and let the dog relax and kind of get a handle on themselves. When you first start training, there's sometimes you can implement things that are going to be a little bit more efficient. I have a difficult time saying that things don't work because a lot of dog training does. It's just a personal preference for some folks. But when it comes to things like marking, behavioral marking, if there's a dog training organization out there that's not currently using behavioral marking, things like the clicker or just even something as simple as using a word like yes as an indicator marker, if you're not doing that, that's a really important step, but I'm not sure how many folks are out of that camp currently, but it's really one of those trains you ought to jump in on, I believe. I'm not sure if you utilize a clicker at all, Doc, but I think that it's a great tool and one of those things that can really enhance your training overall and make things much simpler for both you and the dog.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm just going to lead you because if I just let you go, you're just going to run all around the place and you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to go in circles and circles and circles. So here we go. So your approach is probably more of a positive training approach.
Not in the way that you might think. If you're interested, we can dig into that a little bit more, too. I'm perfectly happy talking about that because I think that there's like these two, if you want to get into the meat of the dog training industry, there's two kind of polar opposite views. I'm sure you guys are familiar with what I'm talking about. You've got, you know, I guess what we can call traditional dog trainers versus positive reinforcement.
Maggie, I don't want to so much get into the industry as to the Maggie Christina.
Mm-hmm.
Because this deal right here is so that maybe somebody up there in Tarboro, Raleigh, your area, or even at large might say, you know, something that lady said resonates with me, and that's the kind of person I've been trying to find. And I believe that this person could help me. And so what I'm looking to do is to allow people to get to know you and your business so that they might be able to say, hey, that's the kind of thing I need. That's the kind of thing I want. Because if we don't do that, then you basically have just gave an hour of your time just for not.
I am perfectly happy just sharing information with folks, too. You know, it's, I guess that's one of the areas where I've always been a little different, is I'm a very non-competitive kind of gal. And
well, we're not talking compete, and we're not talking compare.
Sure.
We're
just
talking show and tell.
Right. Well, and I was actually a little excited to delve into that because some of the differences in how I do train. You know, talking about
that's what I asked you.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So, well, and I think it's important to make note that there is kind of these two camps. Now, I love using food as an enhancement. I won't use it without an indicator word or like a marker, and I refuse to use food as a lure. So you will never catch me luring a dog into position. The way that I hold myself back to train, I jokingly call it watching the art of watching paint dry, because I will almost purposely hold back from the dog and let them experiment, right? It's like if I get in there and make it happen and it looks pretty and that's all great, it doesn't necessarily mean that the dog has actually learned the skill. It just looks like it. So, and especially when it comes to fine-tuning training, which you need to do in service dog training, this can make or break behaviors in the long run because you can accidentally create a crutch, essentially, when you're using luring. Now, this isn't always the case, but it definitely takes away, it detracts from your ability to be really efficient. This is one of the skills that I learned through boarding and training. My three-week program, I'll cover as much as 18 to 21 commands with the dog, just a regular family dog, but in 3 weeks. And that's, you know, in terms of kind of the average, it's pretty good. And it's not because I'm a stellar trainer. I like to think of myself as a, you know, still evolve and, you know, an ever-evolutionary trainer. But I'm not perfect. It's just because I use a really clean process. So, you know, not using luring, but still utilizing the power of food, and then also not using it as a crutch. I have a very specific technique, talking about food, by the way. I use a three-week process where by the end of 3 weeks, I no longer use food for whatever specific behavior I might have been building. So let's say, for example, you teach a dog to sit. If you're still treating the dog with a piece of food for sitting after 3 weeks, you're doing it wrong, or you're not doing it efficiently, rather. So, you know, there's a different way that I tend to use food and a lot of the dog training tools because I've tweaked things to make them more efficient. I've had to do this over time because I'm on time restraints when it comes to boarding and training. And, of course, I'm huge on just overall quality. I ate up a class that I took when I was younger. I think I was 19. I went through a Edward Deming course. Are you familiar with who that is by chance, Doc?
Not right off the top of my head, no.
He was the guy that went over a little history lesson here. He had gone over to Japan after we had dropped the bombs and helped them completely rebuild their economy, not quite single-handedly, but close to it, because he had this crazy idea about quality. And if you raise quality consistently, you end up with a really good product, therefore a really strong system. And his ideas didn't really catch on in this country until about the mid-80s or so. For some of you folks, you can remember back in the 80s, everybody started talking about quality, right? Pretty soon, it was all over the marketing and everything. And nonetheless, I took a class like this, and I realized as a dog trainer, I started looking at that in terms of how can I implement this into my training systems. And I really started doing that about 12 years ago. And so I've trained myself to look at all of these different methods and techniques. Something as simple as teaching a recall. I've developed a way of teaching a dog a recall that is so quick, it's so efficient, and you can call the dog out of just about any distraction sometimes within the matter of just a couple of weeks, you can get a fully proofed behavior. And, you know, being able to apply these types of high-quality systems, especially with service dogs, it just makes sense because you want the highest quality training that you could possibly create. Am I doing it again? Am I running off course? You want to bring me back, Doc?
Well, no, I was just waiting for you to take a breath so I can you know, keep you going in the way I want you to go. But
go
let me
it.
Just ask a direct question because you keep bringing it up. Do you offer that 3-week boarding training for dog owners where they can send their dog to you for training?
I no longer do, as a matter of fact. Just not too long ago, about 2 months ago, I've done my very last board and train program. And it's because I'm stepping foot into going into the industry consulting almost full time. So right now I have 2 professional clients in my area that I'm helping to develop board and trains and day training programs. So my hope is actually to give back all of the knowledge that I have kind of gathered up over the years, including the knowledge of my mentors that trained me, and then subsequently all of them retired right afterwards. So it's my way of trying to give back and allow all of these techniques to continue to morph and form and become even better by the hands of dog trainers, other dog trainers. So I'm currently training other people to do what I had done.
Okay. Let's see, what else did I need to ask you? You started to really, really do what it is I wanted you to do, which was to differentiate your program in your way
mm-hmm.
from the way of others. And I used the term differentiate as opposed to what makes you better. But, you know, a lot of people, myself is one of them, is big on efficient and big on effective. And when you can have something that is more efficiently effective, then you're moving right in there up to an excellence, which is great. Now, from what I think I hear you saying, and this is a good time, I guess, to make this turn, you have an aim of sharing that kind of processes with dog organizations and dog training organizations. Am I right in that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's becoming my main focal point at this time in my career.
Okay, now take a few minutes and tell me, as a service dog organization, what you can do for me and why I should invest in you doing it for my company.
Well, the first thing that I can do is take a look at your overall program that you currently have in place. Now, that's going to be slightly different depending on who you are, but the vast majority of organizations, I'll look at the kind of training that you're implementing, the kind of processes and procedures, how you keep in touch with your folks, as well as how you structure your actual training program for the people. We all heard the term, it's not about training the dogs, it's about training the people. Am I right? So that's another big part of it. So it's, again, a double-pronged approach. We look at what are your dog training systems like? Are they working efficiently? What are the problems you're currently having? How can we bolster things? And then we'll do the same thing with your human education part of the program. And so there's a couple of different pathways, even from an initial consultation. Oftentimes, what I'll do is I'll sit down with the program organizer or whoever heads that part of the organization and talk about how they can implement a little bit more efficient training regimens, if that's what, you know, some of the issues are. Sometimes we look at how to conduct better behavioral evaluations for dogs that they're interested in bringing into the program, as well as how to continue doing minor behavioral evaluations of the dogs, you know, every 6 weeks, give or take, depending on the program, to make sure that those dogs are still thriving in the program. Now, one of my favorite parts, aside from just the dog training piece, is then looking at the training for the humans. this is an area where I've done a lot of my research and a lot of my work is in developing a structure that's more efficient. So, for example, it might be that, well, in a lot of places currently have like a once a week for an hour type of a program where people would come in for training, they'd go home. Very similar to if you signed a regular dog up for an obedience class. And there's some tweaks that you can make, just to give you guys some examples, where just as a general rule of thumb, one of the things that I like to do is have two classes a week, perhaps even for 2 weeks, and then allow a two-week break. Even if you're spending the same amount of time, when you organize that class time in a different way, you're able to do it, and it can change the way that your students are processing information. It also changes the dynamics of what the support system feels like for the students when you're meeting with them more frequently, even if it's for a shorter period of time overall. So there's a lot of benefits that can come to that, including, like I mentioned, just the feeling of additional support. It can be a huge motivating factor in people really trudging and moving forward, particularly if you've already increased the value of the training that you're teaching as well. So human education is a big part of it. There's other examples, too, that I can give, for folks that are struggling a little bit more. I have a program that I've created to help in those kinds of situations that allows an instructor to receive feedback from their student more frequently, whether or not that's through sending in video messages and critiquing and then having follow-up 15-minute conversations with the students to just meeting with them on the phone in between classes. Doing little things like that can really bolster your efforts from the trainer's perspective trying to reach their students.
Cool. Now, as I look at my clock on the studio walls, it tells me that it is time, and this is a scary thought right here, but it is time to give you an opportunity to talk freely to the community that's gathered around the computer listening and speak to them about things that maybe that you're passionate about as it relates to service dogs and things that, maybe you think maybe nobody's telling them that you want to tell them. And, I got a good 5 minutes or so worth of time that you could use to just share with the folks as a person in your position, some things that you think they might ought to know. And if you left here tonight without telling them, you'd feel like maybe you didn't do your job here tonight. So take some time and just go ahead and speak freely to that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think for me the most important message that I really want to impart to people is when you hit roadblocks, when you hit difficult periods in your training, it can be very helpful just to reach out to somebody that has a little bit more experience with the training piece itself, even if that means the trainer reaching out to a different trainer. I think the art of giving back in that way and networking in the community building that it has the potential of creating is really very important. When you're in the trenches working with these types of dogs, it is so important to have a support network, whether or not those people are close by or they're, 5,000 miles away. That's one of the things that I've been very fortunate to be able to partake in is I work with people all over the country doing consultations and just helping here and there when they do reach certain roadblocks. I think it's the reason why it's important to think about this is when you think of somebody like me as a, you know, as a consultant, it doesn't necessarily mean that you would have to come to the table and ask me to do, you know, a huge project for you. It could be something as simple as, you know, there's this dog in this program and I'm just having a hard time. You feel like we've tried everything and we're just at a loss, and we really just need to reach out and see if we, if there isn't something that we have forgotten to try or just aren't aware of that we can try. So a quick 30-minute conversation sometimes is all people need. So don't forget about that. And it might not be me. You know, think outside of the box. Reach out to people that you've heard about that you feel like has worked in the area where you need more help. I had a consultation this morning with a woman that owns a dog boarding facility, and she made an interesting comment to me. She said, you know, I feel like I have to be the one to do everything around here. And when I think when we feel like that, we end up taking everything on. And the important part isn't feeling like you have to do everything, but that you're willing and able to reach out to those people that can provide better answers for you. It doesn't do us any good to, you know, pound our heads into the wall trying to do something over and over again. You can waste a lot of time and energy and frustration by not reaching out to do just that. You know, so I think that that's, you know, kind of the last thing that I want to leave you guys with is just think outside of the box and don't be afraid to reach out and ask for a little bit of help every now and then.
Well, okay, that is certainly a mantra that is given over and over on my show. Get help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we have a lot of owner trainers. And some are more militant than others.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is somebody looking over your shoulder might see something you don't see. Somebody might be able to help you. And when it comes into what we're doing, and, you know, because we are trying to train a service dog, which is a life-saving tool for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's real hard to put a price tag on that, but the value of it is priceless. So we might not need to be so afraid to invest a little bit in making sure that we're having the best out of this dog possible with the least stress on the dog as possible. Now, two things I want to let you speak on a little more clearly that I think are important, and I imagine I should give them to you one at a time, is the first one, let's talk a little bit about doggy burnout, the
mm-hmm.
burnout of the dog. And the training process and the burnout and maybe preventing it. Go ahead and talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, wow. Well, I got to tell you, Doc, that's a perfect segue. You know, talking about don't be afraid to reach out, because I think this is how dog burnout happens is, you know, where you might be one that has been trained to teach a dog in a certain way, and it's just not clicking for that dog, right? And when you try over and over again, or, you know, you do too much repetition, it can really put a lot of stress on the dog. And when you're dealing with already, how do I want to put this? When you're already implementing sloppy techniques, like you mentioned earlier about how important efficiency is, when you're using inefficient methods, the dog is going to get stressed out by them. And I think this is really important to note. Now, if you have a dog that you have pulled from a rescue or from the shelter, this is going to become even more exacerbated. So, you know, we then go back to the importance of making sure that when you first bring a dog in, don't overdo it. Give him time to adjust and to settle in first before you hit the ground running. Make sure that your system, that your training techniques that you're actually implementing are as good as you can find and that they're cleaned up and that they're as efficient as possible. And when you hit these roadblocks, back off of the dog a little bit. Give him an opportunity to de-stress. You know, put together a wellness program for them or a wellness plan to make sure that that dog doesn't reach that breaking point. because I think it does happen. And, you know, different things to look for is, you know, the dog where you've been working with them, you've been training them, things seem to start coming together, and then all of a sudden, a few months in, they start to become, like, defiant, for example. They seem to become defiant, or perhaps they start having potty accidents in the house, or, you know, something as obvious as leash reactivity can be another, you know, side effect. You know, I think it's another important point to make, too, is I've realized, and I've had this discussion with Terry over at Vets to Vets United, that the irony is that, you know, some of these dogs that are trying to be trained through people with PTSD, it's almost like the dogs can develop the symptoms as well. And I believe that there's even been some articles written about this phenomenon on top of it. So, you know, we have to make sure that we're not accidentally translating the problems that we're trying to solve directly onto the dogs.
Yes. And
was that too much?
Well, no. I can speak to that one because that's my area. But dogs do very often pick up on the human, and it's not always the dog alerting to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it's them taking on the human's energy, and
yeah,
that's
absolutely
what they're alerting to. And so, yeah, that's a source of a different story, time for another show and all that kind of stuff. Now, real quick, like, and I really should not say that to you because you're already quick anyway.
I'm practicing my breathing techniques right now. We're good to go, Doc.
There you go. Take a minute or so to speak to somebody who might be at the place where they just found out they need a service dog, and they're looking at different service dog providing organizations. And the question is, what should I look for when evaluating a program?
Yeah, great question. I think from my perspective, it's hard when you're dealing with an unregulated thing, you know. But try to choose, first of all, you know, do a little bit of internet research, but hit the phones as quickly as possible. I find that you're going to get a lot clearer and better information when you call people directly. So that's rule number one. Don't, you know, maybe send out a couple emails, but really try to get on the ground and speaking with people directly. Make sure that they have a history of dogs that they've actually put out there that are currently in service. Right. Sometimes that's a huge red flag, is dealing with organizations where they might not actively even have trained dogs out there. This can be sort of a red flag. It just depends on how much of a journey you're willing to get involved in. Also, be aware of what their training methods are like. You know, I'm actually sort of the belief that, you know, there's all these different methods out there, but at the end of the day, you've got to choose something that you really do believe in from a kind of a fundamental level, because if you don't believe in it, you're not going to implement it in its entirety. So make sure that you choose a place that you actually feel good about. There's nothing worse than having, you know, one toe in the water, but you're unwilling to jump in all the way. And no instructor wants to have somebody like that involved either. It's just, you're going to almost cause issues for yourself if you're not completely invested. So even if you chose the best place, make sure that you're completely on board. And, of course, you know, you can look at the background of the specific instructor or how their program has been developed. If it's something that you feel like is fitting for you, that's more along the lines of an individual preference. You know, if you feel like you need more one-on-one work, you would then want to find a trainer willing to work with you individually. Of course, you have to also have a budget in mind, because that's going to be usually more expensive depending on the direction that you're going.
Okay, that pretty much does that for me, and I feel real warm and fuzzy and good about the whole thing. Let me do this real quick. If you have a question or a comment that you would like to interject at this time, please dial 646-668-2499. And I am going to give you just a brief amount of time to do that. And once you dial it, press the number 1 on your keypad, and then I know that you have a question or comment. Otherwise, we will just bring the show quickly to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. Now, Maggie, at this point in the show, I like to do my last little thing and give you the opportunity to thank the people for listening and tell them bye-bye and give them whatever information that you can give them in order to contact you so that if they are so moved, they can contact you.
And, absolutely.
So
well, thank you, first
that.
Of all, for having me on the show tonight. I mean, I really do appreciate it. It's late for us out here on the East Coast, but I'm absolutely thrilled that everybody has joined us this evening. If you are interested in getting in touch with me, you can email me directly. My email is maggie@grassrootsdog.com. You are more than welcome to check me out on my Facebook as well, which is Facebook.com/grassrootsdogtraining. And if you check that out as well, you can also sign up. I have a new ebook out about wellness plans. It's a do-it-yourself guide to structuring your dog's own personalized wellness plan. It's a book that I've recently written, or a quick report, that I really wanted to get out there for people to take a look at and to start incorporating into their own training plans. It's totally free of charge, so you guys are welcome to snag a copy. And you're also welcome to sign up for my mailing list. I'm going to have more information coming out soon. I have a new membership-based website that will be launched in the very beginning of 2016 that will offer some really awesome training tools to help people increase their efficiency with training as well as keeping people on track. As a matter of fact, Terry over at Vets to Vets United, working with her really sparked the whole project for me because I wanted to give back a system and a structure that is going to allow people to get the most out of their training programs with their dogs, including in the service dog world. So, you know, that is something to check out a little bit later on, because I don't care what kind of training you're doing, the system I've put together is going to be able to help you as well. So you don't even have to follow all of my training recommendations to be able to use all the tools on there.
Well, that is just outstanding right there.
Of course, that's the last thing that I throw out there, right? Oh, by the way, I have a membership site. I'm not the best saleswoman in the world. That's not why I'm here.
Well, that's what my job is to make sure that you get promoted well and to position you in a place to where that promotion is not a hard sell. It's just, you know what? This is who I've been, and some people might want to get in touch with me and see more of what I've done. So here's how you do it. And, you know, you just make it available. That's mm-hmm. not selling. That's just presenting.
Yeah, and here so, I am. I'm like, you know, my biggest thing, I just want to be able to impart a little bit of knowledge, and if that helps people, then I will sleep better at night. So it's truly what I think.
And that's super, although we can't really eat like that. So we've got to be able to, you know, get some value in what we do, because what we do, if it's not valuable, then maybe we should be doing something else.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, and you know, you invest 20 years into something, there's a certain bit of value that becomes attached.
There you go. And so, people, we've heard from Miss Maggie Christina, and I do certainly want to recommend that you give her a good checkout. And if you happen to be a program or organization, wouldn't do you any harm to to reach out and get that third-party evaluation. And, you know, with that evaluation might come some consultation. And then not only does she find the holes in your boat, but she shows you how to best patch those holes in your boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have a more efficient organization. And when you're asking other people for funds, you have that third-party evaluation that says, you know what? You are doing what you said you wanted to do. And so people can feel comfortable supporting your organization because you are doing what your mission statement says and you're being efficient at doing it. So in my book, that's a good thing.
So yeah, in other words, I can make your life a whole lot easier. Pretty much.
Well, there you go. That's what us coaches and consultants say. And, Maggie, I want to thank you for being on tonight and taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much for putting up with me, Doc. I really got to hand it to you. I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, you're welcome.
I hope you guys all have a wonderful night.
Great. And so, folks, I just want to thank y'all for listening tonight. I want to thank you for telling a friend, telling a neighbor. I definitely want to thank you for pressing follow and actually following the broadcast, because that does a lot for us. It lets us know who's actually out there. It lets us know that somebody is supporting what we're doing. And it gives us encouragement to keep on doing what we're doing. And it helps us with the platform that we're on, that they see that there's a reason for us taking up space and time. So please press follow and share our episodes with your friends, with your groups, with other people in the service dog community, or other people who have some kind of connection with the community, whether it's their business caters to people with service dogs, or they're just a community business that the community has service dog handlers in it. So share it, like the programs, and give us a message or so with different guests that you might feel would be good on the show, and we'll have them on. And that way, you keep up with us, and we can let you know what's coming up, who's coming on, when they're coming on, and we can just communicate better. So, take care of yourself. We love you. Love your dogs, because they'll love you right back. And God bless.